everyone for coming. So as Karsten has mentioned, I'm going to be talking today about the role of language experience in neurocognition of late learned language. And I'm going to be comparing what bilingual learning of a third additional language looks like and monolingual acquisition of a second language. And I'm not sure that this audience needs to be convinced why studying bilinguals and multilinguals is especially relevant to the kinds of research we do in language learning. But I would like to point out that with the prevalence of worldwide bilingualism and multilingualism and increased globalization, what we're actually doing in a lot of our classroom contexts is educating learners who already have dual language system or a tri-language system. So when they start learning a foreign language, we're not introducing necessarily a second language, but oftentimes a third or a fourth. And a lot of the research that's been done on pedagogical approaches to foreign language learning has been done in the monolingual second language acquisition paradigm. So what we see and what we are beginning to realize about the effectiveness of certain pedagogical approaches is from a monolingual point of view. And in that point of view, we generally do see that a more traditional approach to second language learning or foreign language learning, such as rule provision and explicit information, seems to lead to better outcomes than a more implicit, meaningful-only, communicative language approach, at least for monolinguals. But the research that has been done comparing monolinguals to bilinguals in different pedagogical contexts as they learn another language is actually quite inconsistent. So we don't know, in terms of language education or theories and models of language acquisition, how bilingualism plays into, and even multilingualism would play into, the landscape of effectiveness for foreign language learning. So just to give you all a brief background, some of the studies that have been done that do compare monolingual L2A to bilingual L3A have found that generally bilinguals do really well. And these are all in full natural language classroom context, but have their own limitations. And then in laboratory context, trying to provide a higher level of control over intervening variables, some of the studies that have been done there, also trying to get at this question of bilingual language learning in a classroom context, have had mostly methodological heterogeneity. So we really don't have a good we don't have a good perspective on bilingual and monolingual differences from these studies alone. So what we wanted to do in our research was kind of tighten the scope a bit. And in addition to that, we're only looking at behavioral data, so we don't really know if there are any neurocognitive mechanistic differences that might be at play here. And we don't know about subdomains of language. There's a lot of work on lexicon, so word learning, but what about grammar approaches? And then also, all of these learners on the left-hand side were tested when they had already started learning. So they were tested at kind of a middle point of their additional language acquisition. So we don't really know how the trajectory of learning proceeds from zero knowledge to higher amounts of knowledge. And that's what I wanted to get at in this study. So what we did was we looked for early balanced Chinese-English bilinguals to compare to English monolinguals. And when I say early, what I mean is we focused on individuals who began learning both languages before the age of 6 years old. And when I say balanced, I mean that they reported similarly high levels of proficiency across various domains of their language ability. And I compared these learners on their additional language learning using Braconto 2, which is an artificial language that was designed to be romance-like. So it has features that would be similar to Spanish or French. And what I'm going to talk about today is how those learners did in a context where they were exposed to a formal or traditional grammar approach, where they were given rules of the language and meaningful examples, like what you would find in a traditional foreign language learning classroom. And I looked at their learning of gender agreement and noun phrases and word order, because it's a bit different across the two. And when I talk today, for the rest of this talk, for the next 12 minutes, about low and high experience, what I'm talking about are two points in the study when I took the learners for two very specific tasks. When they reached low experience, what I'm referring to is they carried out speaking and listening practice throughout the study. And at the beginning of the study, when they reached 45% accuracy in listening ability, so hearing a Braconto sentence and making a corresponding game move on the screen because the language is couched within a chess-like computer game, when they were able to do that, listen and make the correct move, 45% twice in a row, I categorized them as having low experience in the language. And then at high experience was when they had completed all the practice in the study to the very end of all of the modules, of which there were 44. So what I just mentioned was the speaking and listening ability, and this is their practice that they did in the language. All the learners completed the same amount of practice, and that listening was where they heard a sentence and made a move. And speaking practice was seeing a move on the computer screen and using a Braconto 2 sentence to describe that move. And then at low experience and also high experience, I gave them a grammaticality judgment task where they heard correct sentences and incorrect sentences, and they just had to make a decision as to what they thought it was. And while that was going on, I also gathered event-related potentials. And these are a nice measure of neural sensitivity to violations in language. They provide a really nice temporal description of how processing unfolds. And when I look at this in terms of the violation paradigm, where I'm measuring their response to incorrect language, I'm focusing mainly on late anterior negativities in P600s, and these are just neural components that have been commonly found in native-like processing profiles and also in monolingual second language acquisition. So that's kind of what I was looking for in this study. And just very quickly, for anyone interested about Braconto 2 who's not familiar with it already, it has subject, object, verb, word order, so it's different from English or French, which is subject, verb, object. And then it also has gender agreement, very similar to Romance languages, masculine and feminine. So here's the full design, just to give you an idea of what all these learners did. There were 4 total sessions. The first session we're not going to talk about today because it's a background and information session. And all of these were at least 1 day apart, but no more than 5 days apart. So it was a little bit of a longer study, but also nice and compact in terms of the time between sessions. And what I'll be talking about is everything that you see in black lettering. So that's what we're going to go over today. And here are the bilinguals. So the bilinguals, when I mentioned before that they were early and balanced, this is kind of what I'm referring to, where the average age of exposure was less than 6 years old for both of the languages, and they were relatively high in how they rated themselves in proficiency. And when we look at them compared to the monolinguals, we see that there were no differences between monolinguals and bilinguals on some general characteristics, except for foreign language classroom learning. It turns out that the monolinguals actually had reported studying more foreign languages than my bilinguals did. So that's the one difference that we came out with that, which I'll return to just a bit at the end of the talk. So here are the results. I'm going to jump right into them, and these are practice. So what you're seeing right now is listening ability. And for listening, there were 22 total blocks. And this is across the whole study, where you can see that at the very beginning, they were around chance, which is that low experience threshold at which I took them to do the grammaticality judgment task. But everyone, bilinguals and monolinguals together, reach about ceiling by the end of the study. So they're reaching high levels of ability to hear the sentences and make the correct moves. And the same story pretty much exists for their ability to speak the language by the end of the study. So they start out a little shaky, but over time, both the bilinguals and monolinguals really catch up and reach high levels of almost ceiling performance for this language. So learning is definitely happening. And in terms of grammatical sensitivity, as measured by what I did with the grammaticality judgment task, here's the data for their performance on word order, so judging correct or violation sentences in Braconto 2 word order. And from low experience to high experience, both of the groups got better, which is not unexpected because we would want to see progress throughout the study to see that it's effective. But at either time point, there were no differences. And the same story is true for gender agreement. So on judging either of these linguistic targets, the learners got better over time. But they did not but they did not differ from each other. So across practice and also across grammatical sensitivity, we're not seeing differences between bilinguals and monolinguals who have different levels of language experience that they brought with them to this learning task. So what I have here are the ERP results, but in the spirit of accessibility, I'm going to kind of tear this apart for you. What I saw over both groups at low experience, so when they had had very little experience in the language, was an early anterior positivity and an N400. I didn't mention an N400 at the beginning of the talk because it's not typically found in grammar violations. It's more of a lexical semantic ERP component. But what we think is happening here in terms of the early anterior positivity is increased attention to these violations. And what we think is happening with the N400 is that the learners at this low level of experience are relying on lexical semantic processes to process these sentence violations. And then when we get to high experience for word order, what we see is again that early anterior positivity in both of the groups. But what we see here and now is a P600, which is usually taken as an index of structural processing and is one of those components that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk that we looked for. But crucially, what we are not seeing are any differences across these groups at either low or high for word order processing. We're seeing attentional mechanisms at play, and then we're seeing the P600 at high. Gender agreement is a very different story. What we see at gender agreement at low experience is that the bilinguals and monolinguals differ. The bilinguals have a late anterior negativity, which may index increased working memory demands. So their working memory may be more online for this linguistic target at this level of experience. And the monolinguals show P600 at low experience. So here at this level of experience for this target is when we're seeing differences. And then at high experience, what we see is that over both groups, we have a late anterior negativity. So it's still present in the bilinguals, because remember we had that at low for this group. And then it also emerges in the monolinguals at this level of experience. And then the monolinguals retain that P600. So they're still showing this positivity in response to structural violations like that we had seen before. And I do just want to mention that this late anterior negativity, I had mentioned that it's related to working memory demands, but there's also been talk that it could be a continuation of a negativity of that left anterior negativity that I mentioned before, that does index earlier automatic structural processing. But since I didn't find it in any earlier processing, I'm really not at liberty to say here whether it is a continuation of that earlier automatic processing. So, to sum up, for language experience, so these bilinguals and monolinguals, we didn't find any behavioral differences. So that instructional context, that classroom foreign language context, was really muting behavioral differences that we could have found. And this is in spite of the fact that the monolinguals had more classroom learning experience at the outset, and also that these bilinguals predominantly learned their two languages in a naturalistic environment, not a formal setting. So we're really seeing a leveling of the playing field in terms of any behavioral differences. And at low experience for gender agreement is when we did find qualitatively different mechanisms at play between bilinguals and monolinguals, but it's unclear for me yet, at least, as to what exactly that means, especially in terms of how it would apply to other contexts, such as different pedagogical techniques, and also natural language extensions, so not just this artificial language approach. Okay? Thank you. I hope that wasn't too fast.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. We have time for questions.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Hi.
I had a question on the behavioral results.
Yes.
So you presented 21 blocks, I think, continuous, yes. But they were actually divided into three sessions, right?
Yes.
So do you have any comments on what happened between the sessions? So is there, or one question is whether there were in any improvement between the sessions or actually deteriorations, and whether they were different between the groups?
Sure. So there, both of the groups reached low experience, my criteria for low experience, around between 6 and 9 blocks usually. So they completed at least a couple comprehension of those listening, and they completed a couple of the speaking prior to their low experience grammaticality judgment task. And at session 3, they actually completed all of the blocks through 36. So all of the learners reached block 36 before leaving the session. And then in the very final session, they did 8 more blocks. And there were no differences across practice. So I kind of broke them up into clusters of, I broke the blocks up into blocks, essentially into 4. And there were no differences between either of the groups at any time point. Because they were, they got very good very fast, essentially. And so I think that in a different group where there was more variability, there, it might be easier to see subtle differences. But because they got so good so fast, it kind of erased my own ability to see whether or not there are smaller differences that could have been detected. Does that answer your question? More? Anyone else?
Yes, well, I have one.
Yes.
Thanks for this really nice talk. I realized that you only have 9 and 10 subjects. In this
right. Case. So we are adding subjects to this, which is why I kind of speak tentatively about my conclusions, because we're going to double these numbers, essentially.
Excellent. I was wondering whether the patterns, the EAP patterns, are pretty consistent across subjects, because what I remember also from our previous papers, there is quite some variability typically.
In this group, yes. There's also an uninstructed group that is much less consistent. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the bilinguals in this group, yes. And the monolinguals, I'd say yes also.
Okay, so
but not 100.
You basically find
right.
These patterns really representative.
Yeah, they're not surprising when examining the individual maps either. Yeah.
One more question.
Hello, my name is Steve Kaufman. I'm not a neurocognitive scientist or researcher, but a question. I've read that Chinese, because it involves reading characters, is processed in our brains differently from, say, languages that are written in a Latin-type alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that because your students were bilingual Chinese and English, that might have had an impact? Is it worthwhile perhaps taking a different pairing of bilinguals to see if that has any impact on the results?
So are you asking in terms of the writing system or just in terms
of
the language system?
Yeah, would it have any, because
altogether?
It's possible that
sure.
The Chinese bilinguals, that the Chinese language, which might still be dominant,
right.
might influence their reaction to whatever test you put them through.
Absolutely.
Whereas if these were Turks or Swahili speakers, it might have been different. That's the only point.
Yeah, so I think that the language pair is probably definitely important. And we chose this language pair because it's dissimilar to the target that we were looking at. And other studies had looked at languages that were more or less similar in terms of transfer and things like that. And we kind of wanted to avoid that because we really wanted to get at the effects of the external pedagogical manipulation and the influence of language experience in terms of bilingualism. But I absolutely think that the language pair in other studies may make a difference. In terms of the writing system, though, these learners never saw the language, so it was always presented auditorily to them. They didn't see the language until the very last task of the study. Right, because it's tonal. And I can't say that it... I can't say that it absolutely didn't. Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.